Welcome to What's the Story with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week is probably the nation's favourite author, Trevor Zara. So Trevor, how long have you actually been writing?
Well, I wrote my first poetry, well, I used to call it poetry at that time. Now I realise it was only a couple of rhyming couplets and that's all. I was about 9 years old when I showed this interest in poetry. And when I was still a young boy, and even in my, when I was 16, 17 in those days, I used to write and read only poetry. I was very in love with poetry, and I still do, I still love poetry. And then I started writing, experimenting in short stories. And I think my love towards short stories, I think the cause was really the stories I used to hear from my grandma. My grandma was a very good storyteller. Okay. She was an actress as well in her storytelling, because she used to change the pitch of her voice, her body language, the way she looks at you. And she used to tell me lots of stories, folk tales, poetry, and even anecdotes, family anecdotes. So my grandma was about in her 80s at this time. And she used to tell me stories about her grandparents. So imagine we're going back into the 19th century, I think. And those were very inspiring for me. And my first experiments were actually rewriting the stories that grandma used to tell me in my own words. Those when I was, say, 12, 13. Those were my first experiments. But I published my first book. It was in 1971. It was called Il Polenata Deb, The Golden Figurehead, which was just a adventure story for children on the formula of Enid Blyton.
Right.
As a kid, I used to read a lot of Enid Blyton books. And in the 70s, when I was a teacher now, my first days as a teacher, I realized that we haven't any books for children. We didn't have any books in Maltese. We only had textbooks. But you couldn't go into a bookshop and try to buy a book for children. They didn't exist. The genre wasn't there.
Okay.
And so when I used to see my students reading Enid Blyton, as I did when I was at their age, I used to wonder, when are we going to have such books in Maltese? And that was my first inspiration.
Isn't that first book actually being made into a film now?
No, the one in film is Rampuccio.
Ah,
Rampuccio,
okay.
That came later.
Okay.
That's about a very naughty mouse.
Oh.
That's about a naughty mouse, yeah.
So the naughty mouse is not taken as inspiration from a member of your family. This is something that came later on in life?
I could have been inspired from lots of members of my family in that area. But no, I mean, that was I planned a series of short stories, very short stories for children, about the Maltese environment,
okay.
About the valleys we have, the small insects. I wanted to make the children aware that although in Malta we don't have forests, we don't have rivers and mountains, but we have our small valleys with very, very minute and animals. And I call them Tales from Poppy Valley.
Okay.
And my idea was to make the children aware even about the names of the plants we have. Because even now, kids, sometimes they know the names of certain flora. They know them more in English rather than in Maltese. So in these stories, besides Rampuccio, which is the name of this naughty mouse, I have a lot of names and vocabulary related to our Maltese environment.
And have these books been translated into English, or they're
not yet? No, not yet.
I think that would be a really nice sell for the tourism market as well as the local.
Could be, yes. Could be. Perhaps when the film will be ready, I think in some 2 years' time, perhaps somebody would be interested enough to translate them into English.
Excellent. So you've written poetry that wasn't published in those days.
In those days.
Then you went on to these short stories for children. What came next?
But I should point out that simultaneously I wrote also for adults.
Okay.
So I published my first books, as I've already said, in 1971 for children. But in 73, 2 years after, I published my first novel for adults. It's called The Surmast, The Head Teacher. 2 years later, I published another one, which was on a more serious note, a psychological novel, which is called Tahat Rwaat Al-Palm, Under the Palm Trees. And I won first prize in national novel competition at that time. So although I wrote more for children, but I always wrote simultaneously for adults.
Which do you enjoy doing more?
Actually, I don't differ. I don't find a difference between writing for children and writing for adults. The only thing is the technique you have to use and the choice of vocabulary. And when we say children, you know, I mean, there's a difference writing for 5-year-olds and 12-year-olds. They're both children, mm-hmm. but the strategy has to be different.
So what strategies do you employ for a 5-year-old? Is it something you can do in an afternoon, or is it something that actually takes quite a lot of time because your vocabulary, your language, your tone has to be completely different to your natural speech?
Yes, there's a lot of planning involved, especially when it's a picture book. Since I do my own illustrations, so when I'm planning a story, I plan it as a whole package. The text mm-hmm. and the pictures.
You're something very lucky to be able to do that, I think. Yeah.
It's an advantage, isn't it? Because I start doing these sketches while I am planning the text. And while I'm doing the sketches themselves, I get inspiration for the text. So they go hand in hand.
Okay.
And for small children, I think that the illustrations are very, very, very important. Even I have to choose the style I'm going to use. For example, if I'm planning the book for 4-year-olds or 3-year-olds, you have to have different cartoons with bold outline, with very impressive colors, spot colors, solid colors, without any shadings, without any details, but just to give the first impression. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have to go into all these technicalities.
So it's not as simple, people just, you know, throwing together a children's book is actually simple at all.
Sometimes even more difficult, because even thematically, I mean, I believe that I can write to kids on anything, but you have to choose how to say it. I mean, that's the strategy, how to narrate this the story. Once I read something that goes like this: a bad writer narrates a story, a good writer unveils the story, which makes all the difference.
Because you want the child to turn the page.
And, that's right.
And again and again and again. And what differs then when you're aiming at the sort of 12-year-old type child? What changes then? Obviously the imagery would change if you're using imagery at all, but what about the language in that sense? Because 12-year-olds can be of such differing levels. Yeah. How do you pitch that right? How do you...
I think 12-year-olds and 13, and when you go to young adults, adolescents, I mean, that's the most difficult, I think, bracket. Because their vocabulary changes all the time, especially when they start using buzzwords. Now, as we know, buzzwords are very short-lived.
Yes.
So, if I try to put lots of buzzwords in my book to make it look cool, but in a couple of years' time, it would be outdated. And those same words that I used with the intention of making it look cool will making it look dated.
Yes, and very uncool. So what do you think is the enduring, or why do you think the books of Enid Blyton are so enduring? What did she do then to target that age group that made people like you and me fall in love with reading and read all of the books that she came out with? What's that nugget? What's that special?
I think that some writers, like, for example, I'm a very good fan of Jacqueline Wilson, for example, I think, and even the classic Roald Dahl, they know how to write about childhood rather than about children. They try to find the essence of childhood, which is universal, which applies to children, I mean, living in the 1800s and even now. I mean, but what's different? The difference is just cosmetic sometimes. I mean, childhood fears, childhood tensions are still there, and they won't change much. I mean, we change just the surface, and these changes, I think, are just skin deep. But the essence of childhood is always there.
And what about, again, for your books targeted at adults? I was going to say adult books, but that's a different thing altogether. So your books targeted at adults, where does those stories come from?
I think that all my stories, both those targeted for children and for adults, come from my own experiences. I think, when looking back, I think I had a very colorful childhood. When I say colorful, doesn't mean it's unique, but I think it was colorful. And I think that the writer has always to be a hunter, hunting for ideas. I don't believe in the archetypal idea of the writer sitting there and the inspiration comes to him as a divine, as a divine searchlight or spotlight shining on him. I don't believe that. I believe that in hard work. You have to hunt for ideas. You have to be constantly looking for good stories, which are everywhere we look, we could find a good story if we know how to look at it. So that's why I said you have to be a hunter of ideas. You have to search for them continuously. In my case, that's what I do. I remember things from my childhood, not only from my own childhood, but also from the family. My brothers, my brother, my sisters, my uncle, my aunties, friends I met. Mm-hmm. I think there's always the potential of a good story if you know how to look at it, if you know how to find it.
And the sort of building of the characters, the plots, do you know that before you've started and you just have to weave it together, or the stories actually unfold, like say, unveil as you go along?
No, I think every writer has got its own method of planning his own story. I'm very meticulous in my writing. I have to know exactly what I'm going to do. Every chapter was going to involve how I'm going to start the chapter, I'm going to finish the chapter, when I'm going to put tension and suspense, everything. I try to plan everything. But then the actual artistry is when you're writing. But one helps the other, because if I do my homework well and my research well, then the writing process is relatively easy, because my homework is there. My spadework is there. The base of everything is already planned. Then I just write and I try to find new metaphors and a new way I have to express how to project my characters. But I have to have my mind at rest that all the spadework is ready.
You know where they're going and what's going to be happening.
I'm aware where I'm going.
Do you think writing in Maltese, because Maltese is such an expressive language, you have words that really just, said in a certain way, can really depict something, whereas in English they can be a little bit lost. You can say a word and it gets lost, where in Maltese there are certain words that just really pack a punch. Do you think that helps with your storytelling?
I think every language has got its characteristic regarding the effect of the vocabulary. The writer has to know the rules and know them so much, he's so confident in the rules that he knows how to break the rules whenever necessary. But I don't think that the Maltese language has got something special rather than English, for example. You have to know how to play with words, because sometimes, as we have already discussed, the most interesting part of writing is how the writer is projecting his stories. So to know how to project them, you've got to have very good grip on your vocabulary and your idioms. Otherwise, your hands will be tied up.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to What's the Story with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week is Trevor Zara. So, your latest book, so you've been involved in about 150 books, you were telling us earlier, so various children's books, short stories, translations, etc. So this is essentially your 150th book or thereabouts.
Something like that.
Can you tell us a little bit about the book?
The book is called Vespers. It is my fifth collection of short stories for adults. The short stories, the themes of the stories varies quite a lot. But there's always some recurrent theme. In this particular book, I was conscious of it afterwards. The critics made me conscious of it. I wrote a lot about that and about sex. They could be opposites, but I don't think they're opposites, because they are the projections of life. Life wouldn't be interesting if it wasn't for that. Mm. And it wouldn't be colorful if it wasn't for sex. Mm. So I think we could tie them up in one, the links in one chain. I feel very comfortable in short stories. I don't plan how long the short story is going to be. I've got short stories that are just two pagers, and I've got books, for example. I remember that in my second collection in Provence, I have a story that's some 40 pages, which is, I think, a long short story, because the story itself will decide for you its length, its span.
So normally short stories, they say, up to about 7,500 words, something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
How long does it take you then to do a short story? And again, do you work in the same method as when you're writing a novel?
Funnily enough, sometimes even a very short story will take me months thinking about it. But there's no formula on this thing. And it could be a quite long short story, which I have the idea, and in a couple of weeks, I write it. It depends. It's a question. Sometimes you have to have intuition. I do a lot of notes. I write a lot of notes and even my research. Sometimes I'll be researching rather than putting notes. And I'll be telling myself, it is not ready yet. As if there's the fruit in the tree, it isn't ripe enough. But you have to have a sense of timing, not to leave it too much in the tree. Mm. Otherwise,
the birds get it.
The birds will get it and it will rot.
Yes.
But if you cut it before its time, it will still be unripe. So you have to have the sense of timing and to know when you're ready to write it. Okay, I have my planning ready. The research is quite to my satisfaction. But still, sometimes I have the feeling I'm not ready enough to write it down.
There might be something you haven't explored or...
Could be, whatever. Yes, could be. Could be.
And so do you sit down and write every day? Do you have a certain time of day? How do you actually work?
I don't write every day. When I have a project, yes. When I'm writing a novel, usually I write every day. But short stories are not like that. Short stories, sometimes I could spend a whole month, I wouldn't write a single page. The best thing for me, the most important for me, is to read every day. I have to read and read and read. I'm a bookworm. I read. It's not the quantity, but I read every day. Sometimes I read just a couple of pages. Sometimes I read the whole chapter. Sometimes I go well into the night. But then when it comes to writing, I write always only in the morning. I wake up when I have a project. I wake up at 5 in the morning, and I just switch on my computer, and I could go on writing up to 11.
In the evening?
No, 11
in the morning. I was going to say, that's like a long day in front of your machine.
I don't have that stamina, I'm sure. I could spend, I would say, 7 or 6 wow. hours writing. But that's not the rule. I mean, I think that's the exception. When I'm really, how do I say, involved so much in a story that it wouldn't leave me alone. I have to write and write and write.
Could you read us an excerpt of your latest book, please?
Yes, from Vespri. Excellent. I have the first short story in the book, which is entitled Jezebel. I'll read it in Maltese and then I will
yes, if you could tell us a little bit.
A synopsis of
Thank
the work.
Thank you.
Drajt nisuq fil-karreġġata ta' barra. Forse xi nħobb nafsilha kemm xejn iżejjed, jew għax dak li jsuqu fuq ġewwa jkunu qishom tfew il-magna, jew għax tassew qed insir bla sabar. Ninsab fi triq tlejn id-dar war nofsinhar laqatu ġiri. Ma stajt jażilt ħinar minn dan, il-ħamsa u nofs sawr nofsinhar. Hawn traffic jam jaqtalek nifsek. Nipprova neda mar-radju, niġġerra mistazzjon għal ieħor. Il-ġardinar qed jagħti parir il-nies lanqas kapaċi jarfu werqa tat-torsim minn waħda tal-banana. DJ jitbellaħ. Qassis għadu jqum mir-raqda jittama li jikkonverti l-univers. Il-150 puntata mill-qari tal-autobiografija tal-eks ministru. Naħseb nippreferi traffic jam. Qed fir-radju u minnu fih ninduna biha. Nissan Terrano nitfal quddiem minni fuq il-karreġġata ta' ġewwa misjuqa minn tfajla. Għandu jkun? Ma nistax nara sewwa. Għandha xara safrani, ċar-ċar, kważi abjad. X'aktarx miżbuħ, lix u leq fid-dawl tax-xemx. Imma wiċċa ma jidirx. Sten, donna seddur li tfala ġemba. Kieku nista' nsuq ħarir qudiem li ġie preċiżament ħdejha u nara. iżda fil-pront issuq nofs metru toħrab li u dan ta' qoddimi isu mejjet. Imma ħaqt rajtilha il-pjanċa Jazz 010. Tgħid jisimha Jessie, jew forsi Jessica, iva naħseb Jessica. Għax dak ix-xar li xxu jleq jixraq perfettament li xi Jessica, jew jisimha Jezebel. Jezebel, l-ħares Jezebel, żewġ fajlet biss naf dak li sem u t-tnejn insertaw skifużi antipatiku u qabduk l-abtit li s-sabbathom mal-ħajt. Jezebel ma jkollix xar sabiħ bħal dak. Iskot, se nimxu metru ieħor. Issa żur se nara, ostra ċannaqa ma tħarġ ta' quddiemi, u jdonna qed tagħmilli apposta. Hekk kif dak ta' quddiemi jimxi ċentimetru tkun pronta titkaħħal miegħu. Issa ndunak li qed nipprova niġi ħdejha u mhux tagħtini ċans inkejjuża. Issa ħareġet ida l-barra mit-tieqa. Differen pittrin u maqtuejn ċatti mit-truf. Issa għandha xi fossa tleq fuq ukoll differ tal-moda. U għandha żgħod xpipeter qatt tad-deb. Tippretendix ta' marti s-sultan. Qed tirranġa l-mera imma xorta wiċċa ma nistax naraħ. Jazz 010. Qed ngħid forsi l-karozza ta' żewġa, Jasmine. Ekku, għax nista' nterranu donna aktar tixraq il-raġel milli l-tfajla b'xara bajda nibdifra impittrin, tfajli ta' dat tip tarhom b'xi Toyota Vitz jew Mażdatu. Iżda forsi qed ikun sessista. Għandha minn din Jessie Jessica nserta tfajla maċow u tippreferi karozza ftit goffa? Isa sen niċċaqalqu, tikkoħra. Fajna di żgur qed tħoss nipprova nersaq ħdejha, inkejjuża u skifuża bħal dawk iż-żewġ Jezebelliet. Ekku, bil-forsi jisimha Jezebel, tardira. Imma għandha darja sbieħ. Ħarġet il-lemini mit-tieqa u qed ferfru l-barra mar-ritmu ta' xi mużika li qed nisma. Nixel ir-radju u ninfex mill-ġdid għallep l-istazzjonijiet. Tgħid liema minnhom qed tisma'. 93.7 FM li hawnhekk għatam dak il-qassis li qatim jaqta' għall-qalbu. Il-101 lanqas. Ekku, 89.71. Żgurda qed tisma', ida qed tiċċaqlaq bl-istess ritmu ta' din il-kanzunetta. Qollejt il-volum biex forsi tismani u tagħti każi. Ebda interess. Qollejtlu aktar. Għadha mitluf faxxi jrida. U strett xi kruwa ta' mużika. Irġajna sensuqu. Ir-ringela karozza quddiemna tidher li ħataqbad ir-rankatura. Mixin. Għall-irwieħ, issa ma nħallix taħrab li? Arja marqa li, wes qed it-tajers u taqtaret. Imma nilħaqa, tibżax. Issa qbiżna ir-roundabout u traffiku beda miexi bil-ħeffa. Ja xitan x'tafsela? It-traffik lajt il-ġejjin għadhom ħodor. Jazz diġa qabżithom, ħaffef, tajjeb mistom jiena wkoll. Daqt nilħaqa. Ix jafek, qed tagħmel l-indicator lejn ix-xelluk. Se tiġibet lejn bulebel, u jiena l-berżebbuġa. Tek niġbet l-barajha u nibqa' nsegwija bħal kelb imġewwa waħda t-triq, x'se nagħmel? Nixel l-indicator? Ta' waraj qed idoqli l-ħorn. U naqqas qed jagħtuni ċans naqleb għax-xelluk. Okej, m'hemmx tagħmel. Kompli sboħxarek isfarċar. Jixraqlek. U bqa' ħuħsib def difrejk, hekk. Kemm int skifuża u nkejjuża u affaxxinanti, Jezebel.
Thank you. Can you tell us a little bit about that for our English-speaking listeners?
So, it's written in the first person. I'm going back to my home after work at 5:30, and I find myself in a traffic jam. And on the other lane, I could just have a glimpse of this girl, or I think it's a girl, driving a car, but I can't see her face. And all the story, I'm trying to guess what kind of girl she might be from her number plate, which is Jazz 010, could be Jessica or Jezebel, or it could be her husband, Jasmine. And I'm trying to figure out what kind of girl she might be through all these little glimpses I'm having from the way she paints her fingernails and the bracelets she have and the kind of music she's listening on her radio, and I try to tune my radio on the same wavelength that she's listening to. And all of a sudden, while I'm trying to always to overtake her just to have a look at her face, I never manage to have a look at her face until she goes away. And I'm still left with my imagination.
Ah, excellent. See, I would have probably driven into her to strike up a conversation, but then I'm a little dramatic. So, it's true. What's are you working on now? So this has just been published. Recipe's just been published and is
yes, out November, in November, last November. Now I'm working on a new set of short stories, but I think I wouldn't publish them before 2018 or 19. Because Vesperi took me some 4 or 5 years.
Okay, to collect.
To collect enough. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes I write a story and when I'm looking at it in a distance, I say, well, this is good enough. And I'll throw it away. So although, say, I wrote about 30, but I'm sure that I have to get rid of a couple of them.
So when you go back and reread your work and re-edit, or once it's finished, you think, no, that's
no,
finished,
no,
that's
I
down
read
to...
It. I read it quite a lot.
Okay.
And sometimes I have to, as I said, I have to throw them away. But I edit and I keep on editing up to the last moment. That's the advantage of our digital era, that sometimes, even when I send my work to the publisher, and we're in the stage of doing the layouts and all the pre-press. Sometimes they'll say, well, please, I'm going to send you a new chapter for chapter 5, something which we could do now.
Yes, today it's
And that's an advantage, because I could keep editing my work and try to find better ways of expressing myself. Well, in the olden days, I remember those days when we used to have linotype. I mean, once the book is ready, you couldn't edit anymore.
Well, that's the end of this week's edition of What's the Story. You've been listening to me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week, the charming Trevor Zara.